You should have been warned. A Mergen eats a diet of rare grasses only. And now the High King of the Mabden is perished. A mere carcass of mutton. No matter.
That must be the Foy Miori on the march. They move so much faster than I thought possible.
But Gofanon cocked his head to one side and listened almost curiously. Then from both sides, the green-faced horsemen began to bear down on them. Horam whirled his war axe and made a great wound in the neck of the first horse. Seeing greenish, viscous liquid ooze from the gash, it halted the horse's momentum, but it did not kill it. Its green eyes rolled, and its green rider brought a dull iron sword down at Coram's head. Coram knew how to counter such blows. He chopped deliberately at the wrist, and wrist and sword flew earthward like a bough lopped from a tree. He chopped next at the horse's legs, so that it crashed onto the dusty clay and lay there, unsuccessfully trying to regain an upright position. This helped to confuse the next rider who came at Coram and was unable to strike a clean blow without snaring his horse's legs in those of the wounded animal. The scent of pines was now almost overpowering as the sap oozed from the wounds Coram wrought.
I once loved that scent, and now it sickens me.
Gofanon had brought at least three of the pine folk down and was chopping at their bodies, slicing off limbs so that they could not move, though they still lived, their green eyes glaring, their green lips snarling. These had once been the flower of Mabden warriors, probably from Kaerlud itself, but the human blood had been drawn from their veins and pine sap poured into them instead, and now they served the Foy Miori. Although they were ashamed of what they had become, they were at the same time most proud of their distinction. As he fought, Coram tried to glance around him.
Gofanon, do you see any means of escaping from the gorge?
No! Tamer has chosen the best place to attack. Where the sides are steepest and the passage narrowest.
So we can defend ourselves a little longer, but never hope to get away.
Eventually, they would be overwhelmed by the people of the pines, vanquished by these living trees, these brothers of the oak's oldest enemy. Like a marching forest, they rushed again at the one-eyed Vardach with the silver hand, at the eight-foot she with the bristling black beard. And Gaynor, at a safe distance, laughed on. He was indulging in his favorite sport, the destruction of heroes, the conquest of honor, the extermination of virtue and idealism. And he indulged himself thus because he had never quite succeeded in driving these qualities from his own self. Thus, Gaynor sought to still any voice which dared remind him of the hope he dared not hope, the ambition he feared to entertain, the possibility of his own salvation. Coram's arms grew weary, and he staggered now as he chopped at green arms, slashed at green heads, cracked the skulls of green horses, and grew dizzy with the scent of the pine sap, which was now sticky underfoot.
Farewell, Gofanon. It heartened me much when you joined our cause, but I fear your decision has led you to your death. Gofanon?
Coram tried to peer through the mass of green warriors to the far end of the pass, where he had last seen Gaynor, but there was no sign of the flickering, fiery armor.
It seems that Prince Gaynor the Damned has deserted the scene of his triumph.
And now the warriors of the pines were falling back, looking fearfully into the sky. And Coram risked glancing up, and he saw a rider there. The rider was seated upon a shining black horse, all dressed in red and gilded leather, the buckles of its harness of sea ivory, and the edges all stitched
and
with large
and
distinct of the pines came the fresh, warm smell of the sea. And Coram knew that the smell came from the smiling rider, who sat astride the horse with one hand upon his hip and the other upon his bridle. And then casually, the rider stepped his horse over the gorge and turned so that he could look down into the pass from the other side. It gave Coram some idea of the size of horse and rider. The rider had a light golden beard, and his face was that of a youth of some 18 summers. His golden hair was braided and hung down his chest. He wore a breastplate which was fashioned from some kind of bronze and decorated with motifs of the sun and of ships, as well as whales and fish and sea serpents. Upon the rider's great fair-skinned arms were bands of gold whose patterns matched those on the breastplate. He wore a blue cloak with a great circular pin at the left shoulder. His eyes were a clear, piercing green-gray. At his hip was a heavy sword, which was probably longer than Coram's full height. On his left arm was a shield of the same glowing bronze as his breastplate. And Gofanon was looking delightedly up to the gigantic rider on the gigantic horse, even as he continued to fight the people of the Pines.
Ha ha! I heard you coming, brother! I heard you! And I know who it was!
Greetings, little Gofanon. You fight well. You always fought well.
Do you come to aid us?
It seems so. My rest was disturbed by the Foimiare vermin laying ice across my ocean. For years I've been at peace in my underwater retreat, thinking to have no more irritation from the cold folk. But they came with their ice and their mist and their silly soldiers, and so I must attempt to teach them a lesson.
Almost carelessly, he drew his great sword from its scabbard, and with the flat reached down to the gorge to sweep away the Brothers of the Pines, so that they began to retreat in panic in both directions.
I'll meet you at the far end of this pass. I fear I will get stuck if I try to join you there.